Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. So today's topic is a nutrition topic, and it was requested by someone on our social media, so thank you. And the topic is intermittent fasting. So we've done diet, we did a podcast in the past about starvation-style diets, and intermittent fasting is kind of like one of the things that falls into that category. But this topic was requested kind of like on its own, separate from everything else. So I wanted to give it a fair, unbiased review, as much as a person can do that, because we always carry on in our opinions, even when we try not to. So you'll hear throughout the description of this what my opinion is of intermittent fasting. But I did want to give it the pros and cons and kind of give kind of like a good informational background about it, tell you what I like about it, what I don't like about it, and then if you're going to do it, tell you how to do it well. So that way you get the best out of it if you're going to do it. So first of all, let's look at what is intermittent fasting. And generally, there's a lot of variations to how people structure the manner in which they do it. But generally what it would be considered is you don't eat during periods of the day, and then you do eat only during designated times of the day. So let's say, for example, somebody gets up in the morning and they kind of want to live their whole day and not eat until a window of, like, say, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. And the idea behind this, there's a lot of beliefs of what this can do. But in general, let's just kind of start off here with, like, less of the details, is this tends to just be easy for people to follow. So the pros of this, let's give another example, for example. So there is somebody can wake up and they go during their entire day, then they only eat from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. And their idea is to get all the calories they need per day in that window. And then they would go to sleep, wake up the next day, and do about their business. Now, sometimes people will move that window around. Sometimes people make it larger. Sometimes people make it earlier in the day. Sometimes people will split it up into two different times of the day. There's a lot of variations and variances out there. But the general concept of intermittent fasting is you don't eat part of the day, hence the fasting part. And intermittent kind of means like you're not just fasting for days on end. You're only going to fast for small incremental times. So somebody might wake up and maybe they eat from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Then they don't eat during the afternoon. Then they eat from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. And that might be their structure. So the 6 to 10 in the a.m. and 6 to 10 in the p.m., that's the only times they eat, and the rest of the time they don't. Some people, like I said, will maybe have only evening feedings. Some people have morning feedings. It kind of just varies. And people tend to move this around. Usually what happens is they'll be introduced to the idea. And in the way in which they're introduced, somebody has already presented a structure. So maybe they presented the structure of 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. And this person says, hey, you know what, I get up really early. Like, I get up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, so I'm kind of in bed by like, or getting ready for bed by 8:30, 9 o'clock, so it doesn't do me any good to have a feeding time till it's 10, because I'm already in bed by 9. So maybe they move their time from 5 to 9, rather than 6 to 10. So that's typically what happens, is people are suggested a structure, and then they start to tweak it based on what they want. And that doesn't mean it's a bad thing, but it just means that there ends up being variations to the way in which people perform this. So just like ketogenic diet, there's about 400 ideas of what a ketogenic diet should be like structured as. So everybody kind of has their own twist and own variation of it. But that's the idea, is you take part of the day and not eat, and then you take part of the day and you designate that towards eating. So let's go through kind of the pros and advantages of it first, and then I'll go through the limitations and like kind of negatives. So the pros of this is that it tends to be very black and white rules. So it improves short-term adherence. And I'll explain why I'm only designating that as short-term adherence. But it does improve short-term adherence because you have an idea, a pretty clear sense of what's right or wrong. If I eat before 6 p.m., I'm wrong. If I eat within 6 to 10 p.m., I'm right. So it's just, yes, I'm right, yes, I'm wrong. So very clear-cut rules. And that helps with adherence because it just kind of makes it more clear cut. So if you're hungry at 4, you say, no, I know I'm not supposed to eat till 6, so therefore I have to wait till 6. So with those clear guidelines, you know whether you're doing right or wrong. You're still going to do things wrong. We all make wrong decisions. But it's going to give you a little more structure of what is right or wrong. Then also that improves like understanding. So since you understand the rules better, you're going to have a better chance of following the diet, quote unquote, correctly to its structure. And then since it's a clearer sense of right and wrong, you have a better chance of adhering to it because you won't have a way of rationalizing your choices. So, for example, in like regular kind of eating, if somebody says, you know, I'm supposed to have, a meal right now, but I'm kind of busy. I don't really want to take the time to do that. I'm just going to stop and get a Snickers bar. Hey, you know, anything's better than nothing. And they rationalize a Snickers bar rather than having what they were supposed to have. So with kind of other diet structures, you can kind of manipulate the rules some. Whereas with intermittent fasting, it is more clear-cut of what's right and wrong. Then the other benefit to intermittent fasting is oftentimes people struggle in regular eating habits to eat when they're busy. So if they're busy and they got a lot of things to do at work, quote unquote, or, you know, just living life and you got a lot of things that day, eating gets in the way. You have to make time for that. You have to make time to not only actually eat the food, but maybe get the food, prepare the food. So there becomes kind of like an annoyance around that. So what you can choose to do with intermittent fasting is you can choose to have your busiest time of day being when you're not going to eat, and then eat at night when you're less busy. So that's kind of more convenient. So you don't have to struggle with eating whenever you're busiest. So that is an advantage to it. And you don't have to feel wrong because that's the rules of your diet. So you're setting the rules up for what your lifestyle is. And that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. So don't think I'm trying to like hint a bad thing. It's just that's what you're doing is you're manipulating the rules of nutrition to fit your lifestyle. And the other benefit is kind of a digestion rest. So sometimes people will talk about the benefits of intermittent fasting for reducing inflammation in the gut. And what they mean by that is if your body is processing food all day, their argument is that your body can become like the intestinal tract can become inflamed. It can kind of become quote unquote overworked or overstressed. And they'll say, hey, you know, giving it time without food intake gives it a chance to take a rest. It gives it a chance for the inflammation to go down. And that can be extremely, extremely helpful and very beneficial if you have an inflammatory type disorder with nutrition. So maybe a person has like irritable bowel syndrome, and maybe their irritable bowel syndrome is related to anxiety, and that anxiety is caused by a fear of like kind of like not knowing what they're eating is right, or if they have to, like if they have to eat out like in public. Or at social events, they'll kind of get like IBS just due to the anxiety of that. And what that can be is that anxiety almost causes the inflammation and causes the distress in the gut. So if they can make clear-cut rules, that allows them to structure their eating away from the things that promote anxiety, it'll then not trigger IBS. So there are, and there are other a ton of other examples of inflammation-type disorders in which intermittent fasting can help regulate and or make a positive difference in some way towards those. So that's generally the positives, the pros of it, is it's black and white, clear to follow. Therefore, it improves short-term adherence and it helps your understanding of what's right and wrong. You also don't have to eat when you're busiest, so it's a little more convenient. You can make your feeding times when you're at home, sitting on your butt late at night, and you have nothing else to do anyhow, so you just eat then. So, which is a lot of times what people do already, is they already undereat during the day and overeat at night. So you're just changing your rules to actually be exactly that, to where you don't eat during the day and you eat everything at night. And the reason why that quote-unquote works as a diet is you would be monitoring what you do intake at night and you'd have a caloric control or a caloric cap. So you're not just going to eat anything and everything from 6 o'clock to like 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., but you might eat, like say you deem yourself to have 2,200 calories in a day, then you're going to have your entire 2,200 calories in that four-hour window. And generally the amount of calories you used per day will get kind of like, this is where people play the numbers game of collect calories in versus calories out, and they don't look at the rest of what's involved with fat loss weight loss or even weight gain. So you can actually use intermittent fasting to gain weight. And there are arguments for how not eating at certain times a day helps build up hunger levels to overeat then later in the day and help you actually gain weight. So there actually is an argumentative benefit to intermittent fasting for gaining weight. So you'd think, like, man, if I am struggling to get enough calories in, how in the world is not eating during part of the day going to help? And that's part of it, is it helps increase hunger levels. So it's almost like you're taking a swing in one direction away from eating to hopefully swing back and get a bigger effect in the other direction of overeating. But generally, that's what they'll do, is you'll create a caloric cap. So you'll deem your basal metabolic rate, like the amount of calories you need per day just to stay yourself, stay the way you are, at, say, 2,400. So then you're only going to cap yourself at, say, 2,100, and you'll come away at the end of the 24-hour period with a 300-calorie deficit, and that'll, quote-unquote, lead to weight loss. And I'm using very specifically the term weight loss, not fat loss, over time. So that's the idea of correct intermittent fasting. And again, you can have yourself controlled for a caloric deficit if you want to lose weight. You can have yourself controlled for caloric maintenance. So if your calories were deemed to be 2,400 as maintenance level, and you just eat 2,400 every day, that'll help you hold weight. So that way you don't gain weight or lose weight if you're just happy with where you are. Or like we said, is you can have a caloric surplus to help you kind of gain weight. So that's the idea. So now, what are the limitations and cons? So I have hinted to this before in podcasts, and I hinted to it at the beginning of this one, is I'm not a big fan of intermittent fasting. I don't think it's the best way to eat. I do think it works for some people because it gets them eating better than what they're currently eating habit-wise, but it doesn't mean it's the best way to eat. It's just, this is the best way you'll follow. Okay? So there was a conversation I got with somebody the other day. We were talking about what was the best diet. And the answer is the one you'll follow. Because even a shitty diet that's, like, say, only 70% good, followed to 100% means you're going to get 70%. Most of us, when we don't follow any diet, we'd be happy to be getting 70%. We're usually just kind of, like, fluttering up and down and, like, trying not to lose any more ground. So sometimes a crappy diet followed exactly is better than a best diet followed not at all. So you might say, I have the best diet in the world, but if you don't follow the damn thing, no, you don't. So it doesn't matter how good your diet is if you don't actually follow it. So that's, I don't know how that isn't common sense, but sometimes that is not common sense. So, okay, so the limitations and kind of negatives of intermittent fasting is it doesn't match the way our body uses fuel. So the healthiest way to run the body would be the healthiest way to run a machine, is as I use it, I give it fuel, and I maintenance it. So I give it the fuel it needs to run. I also double-check on it, make sure everything's operating correctly. You know, I kind of, like, keep up with wear and tear of the machine. So we wouldn't want to just slap a bunch of fuel in it, run it for, like, you know, months and weeks and whatever, however long, and then all of a sudden take, like, oh, man, I better look at that and see if that's okay. So, like, that's actually how I treat my car. Sorry, Dad. But I put fuel in the thing when it tells me the gas tank is low, and then I get the garage to check out my car every time I have to get the oil changed, like every 10,000 miles or something. So I kind of put fuel in it and then don't pay attention to it at all for 10,000 miles. Not the best way to run a car, but that's my way of doing it. And that's how some people treat their body, is, yeah, I'll put food in when I'm hungry, and then, you know, some other time I'll get told whether I'm good or bad. So whereas all of a sudden they look on the scale a month later and they've gained 20 pounds, oh crap. Or they go get blood work done, find out they have high cholesterol, oh crap. So it's kind of like something will catch your attention later on, but you're not mindfully paying attention to it as you're using it. So the best way to run the body is like running a machine, like we said, is to put fuel in when you're using it. So since intermittent fasting, you operate part of your day absolutely at a caloric deficit. So if I don't eat till 6 p.m., what the hell was I running off of until 6 p.m. And our hope would be that it's body fat, but it won't be. It's body fat some, a bunch of like stress hormones like cortisol, we're getting energy from that. And then also we're breaking down muscle tissue and kind of like have some other wearing down, tearing down effects. So what that does is by having us at part of the day as a deficit and then part of the day being a surplus, but that surplus being when we're inactive. And the deficit being when we are active, it means we're kind of creating a big kind of drop in deficit, digging a big hole in our body's metabolism and the way it runs. And then hopefully at night, we eat enough for it to catch up and sleep during the night, and all of a sudden it can make the repairs it needs. So it's almost like you beat the crap out of the machine, then you hurry up and try to catch up at the end to try to fix it. So that's what you're doing every day, is you're beating the crap out of your machine, you're giving it food and sleep, and hopefully it recovers. Then the next day you're beating the crap out of the machine, you give it food and sleep, and hopefully it recovers, rather than just allowing it to recover as it creates the damage. So every one unit of damage, it fixes one unit. Every one unit of damage, it fixes one unit. Instead, you're creating 15 units of damage, throwing food and sleep in there and hoping it gets all 15. And maybe today it only gets 13, and it carries 2 units of damage into the next day. Maybe the next day it fixes 14, but there's another unit of damage plus the 2 before, and now you're carrying 3 units of damage into the next day. And then all of a sudden when you're physically active, that leads to like, my knee kind of hurts every time I squat, or my shoulder kind of hurts every time I do a bench press or dumbbell press, or, I kind of tweaked my back a little bit there. So it's kind of like small little nagging things start adding up and adding up, and what that means is that you're not actually repairing your system at the rate in which you're using it. And that's because you're having these big drops during the day and then hopefully trying to make up at the end of the day. So the other effect of that is we tend to have lower energy. So we think about this as our body, if we're using it during the day and it's not fueled, what are you running off of? So your body's running off of stress hormones, and it's going to send you the signal that, hey, I don't like any of this. This is miserable. Please stop moving. And then you're going to be like, oh, I'm kind of sleepy all the time, or, man, I just don't feel like doing anything during the day. And that's your body telling you, hey, I'm in a deficit, stop moving around. And we overcome that usually by like using stimulants. So a typical, I believe a cup of coffee is somewhere around 100 to 120 milligrams of caffeine. I have not checked that recently, so I might be a little bit off. So, and I know like a small can of like Red Bull is like 80 milligrams. I know like the one drink I used to drink way back in the day was 320 milligrams of caffeine, and that sucker got you moving. But I've had clients before who've reported over having 1,000 milligrams a day of caffeine and still saying they felt sleepy sometimes, or they were still having sleep troubles. And they were like, man, I just don't know why I don't have any energy. It's because you're not freaking eating when you're actually using your body. So your body gets pissed off. It tells you to stop moving. You shove caffeine down your face, and then all of a sudden it kind of masks that energy deficit. But that energy deficit is still absolutely hidden there. It's like putting a Band-Aid over a cut. You still have the cut, you dumbass. So the cut is still there. You just can't see it now. So that's where people will have the energy deficit. They pour caffeine down their face, and that hopefully makes up for it. And it does for a certain period of time, but then you start having stress effects. And your body starts getting really angry because it's having to run off of cortisol and caffeine, not running off of food. And that shows up in a bunch of different ways. And one of the ways is having large mood swings. So somebody might find as they follow intermittent fasting for longer, say, a couple weeks into a couple months, they're going to have huge energy swings, huge mood swings. So it kind of affects their internal happiness. So they tend to spend most of their day just kind of annoyed or tired or mad at everybody. And they don't have the best relationships. So there's that term hangry, if you've ever heard of that, is when you're hungry and angry at the same time, is you will live hangry in intermittent fasting over a longer period of time, the longer you do it. So since the body operates part of the day in a deficit, you have those higher cortisol levels, which we said will lead to caffeine abuse, most likely, or stimulant abuse, and that also leads to sleep problems. So the cortisol usage itself leads to sleep problems, and then you tack onto that caffeine usage, and you definitely have sleep problems. You'll either have a hard time falling asleep, or you'll be dead to the world, die in your bed, but then wake up 2 hours later wide awake. And that means that you're operating off of cortisol and or caffeine during the day rather than actual nutrient energy. And that's going to be something that's going to kind of like annoy your lifestyle and not help you live the healthiest life for yourself. Okay, so those are some of the negatives, limits, and cons. And then also, if we think of following moments of using the body when it's underfed, people often experience higher intensity of cravings. So if I went most of the day without food, my body registered that, so maybe we didn't pour enough caffeine in our face to blanket it, and our body actually recognizes it, then it's going to start saying, hey man, we need fuel. You know, hey, we just walked past the candy aisle. Go grab a candy bar. You love candy bars. You know you love candy bars. That thing would taste so delicious, and it kind of argues its way into getting you to eat. So our cravings become more intense. So then during your feeding times, you'll have a calorie cap, but it'll be harder and harder to stay under that calorie cap and feel satisfied. So over time, you're going to want to peek out like a little bit more. You know, maybe an extra 100 calories won't really kill me, or maybe this or maybe that. You know, oh, I've been great all week. I can go a little bit more today. So you'll start to rationalize and break your caloric limit because you're having greater craving signals. So that's something else that can happen with intermittent fasting. And then also the final one is more of like not physiological, but just relational kind of social, is that intermittent fasting, your feeding times don't always match social times. So maybe you're in a feeding hour, like you're from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., but somebody wants to go watch a movie. Well, you're like, well, damn, if I go to the movies, if I go to an 8 o'clock movie, we have to leave at like 7:30. Then when I'm at the movie, maybe I can get some popcorn or something, but that's not really the best calories. The movie won't be over until 10:30. By the time I get home, I'm already past my feeding. So if I go to the movies tonight, I'm only going to get feeding time from 6 p.m. to like 7:30. So sometimes social events will get in the way. And then also sometimes you'll have a social event that involves eating, but it's outside your window. So maybe your window feeding time is 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., but you go to a Saturday morning kind of family reunion picnic, and you're like, man, I'd love to eat. You know, I haven't had, you know, grandma's cookies in forever, but you can't eat because it's not your feeding time. So sometimes that'll throw you off a little bit. Then you have to find out ways to say, okay, well, maybe I'll bump my feeding time up. It's normally 4 hours. I'll just put it from noon to 4 p.m. But since that's different than your body is used to, you're going to eat during that time. And then all of a sudden at like 8 p.m. at night, your body's going to go, what the hell? Like, I burned off all that food we just ate from 12 to 4. I'm hungry now. You need to feed me. And then you're going to have to hurry up and try to go to bed or just be miserably hungry for the rest of the night. So there are some of the pros and cons limitations. But how do you use intermittent fasting? So say you want to do it. You understood everything I just told you, but you're like, hey, you know what? I think this still best fits me. It fits my personality, fits my lifestyle. I want to make this work. Okay, so let's do this. Let's compromise a little bit in the middle. So you want to split your feeding times to having some type of food before your most active time and having some food after your most active time. So that way you put a little bit of fuel in the body before you use the machine, and then you put fuel in the body after you use the machine to help with repairing. So rather than building a big deficit than trying to make it all up, you can put some food in at the beginning, and that'll take care of maybe half of that deficit. So you only come into the feeding time at night with only half the deficit of normal. So that's going to make a big difference. It's going to make you feel a lot better. So splitting your feeding time in half and putting one before your busiest time, one after your busiest time, that'll make a good bit of difference, okay? Then be mindful of stimulant use. Actually record, track, or do something to where you can see how much stimulants you're using, and don't allow that to increase dramatically. So you want to track that and say, okay, if I've been surviving at 200 milligrams a day for the last week, I don't want to all of a sudden go to 400 because I'm tired the second week. Maybe I need to adjust my calories and make up for that tiredness, or I need to do something else. So you have to track stimulant use, and then try not to use stimulants on your low activity days and or like weekends. Try to keep your body sensitive to it in some ways by taking certain days off, or if you have a lower activity day, use half the stimulant as normal. But you need to be mindful of your stimulant use so that way you're not masking the underlying kind of cortisol and stress effects on the body. Okay? And then you may need to monitor your carb intake on that final feeding before you go to bed. So some people will report having problems falling asleep if they eat carbohydrates right before bedtime. And there's some sciencey kind of effects to this in a sense where our body operates off of glucose. So if you pour in a bunch of sugars and carbs, the brain kind of like awakes. I think I said the body operates. The body definitely operates off of glucose, but it can also operate off of like ketones and fats. But the brain itself operates only off glucose. So if you eat a bunch of carbohydrates, sometimes the brain actually catches like a second wind where you become wide awake. And part of that is because if you were kind of in a foggy state during the middle of the day, the brain was kind of underfed and kind of running on fumes. Now all of a sudden you pour a bunch of sugar and caffeine in there, sugar and carbs, the brain all of a sudden wakes up. Okay, so you have to be careful of that. So if you have trouble falling asleep after your feeding, you might need to switch your evening feedings to be very low carb or no carb and focus mostly on proteins and fats. So if you're going to do intermittent fasting, those are my three kind of recommendations. Split your feeding time to before activity and post activity. Be mindful of your stimulant use and try not to use as much stimulants as you need. So less stimulants on days you don't do anything or do less. And then be mindful of your carb intake at that final feeding. And then, of course, if you're doing all of this, you should have a caloric cap. So you have to be tracking your calories to make sure you're not just willy-nilly eating anything and everything. Otherwise, you're not going to have really good results because you'll have no clue whether you're overeating or undereating per day. So you might have this structure rule of I only eat 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., but you'll be amazed how much you can eat in 4 hours. So people can consume like 7, 8, 9,000 calories in 4 hours. So you have to have a caloric limit. So that's kind of like unspoken rule number 4, okay? So the overall summary for intermittent fasting is I don't believe it's as good as just learning how to eat healthy in terms of matching your meal timing to your energy output. And kind of we did podcast number 41 called Diet Right, What Matters Most. And we look at caloric intake. That's definitely important, but it's not the whole picture. So you also have macronutrient percentages, is how much carbs, fats, and proteins I'm eating compared to each other. We have meal timing, which again is a huge part. Then you have micronutrient kind of, or macronutrient quality is macronutrient quality means am I eating Oreos or like sweet potatoes? So what is the quality of my carbs, fats, and proteins? And then there is definitely like micronutrients involved, but we don't, that's kind of like, that is a very significantly important thing, but people usually don't get the bigger things right first. So micronutrients like vitamins and minerals are absolutely important, but they come into play after you get the big things right. So there's some debate on that, but let's just focus on those top four. So calories, macronutrient percentages, meal timing, then macronutrient quality. So work on that. And that macronutrient quality will come into play with the micronutrient balance. So those are what you want to look at. So those are kind of the key components. So intermittent fasting helps you control caloric intake, but it completely bombs the meal timing aspect. And then if you're not actually tracking your macronutrient percentages, you could eat for 4 hours and eat entirely all carbs and not get enough protein. And protein is what fixes your joints, repairs your muscles. It does a whole bunch of healthy stuff for skin or hair or nails. It regulates body temperature, pH in the blood, a whole bunch of stuff. So if you're not paying attention to that, you might be insufficient at that. It's hard to get, you know, say 150 grams of protein in 4 hours unless you're specifically that type of eater, like where you like meats, you like dairy products, you know, you're trying to get a lot of like eggs in. So sometimes when people do intermittent fasting, they run the risk of really under eating their proteins. So that's something to be mindful of. So intermittent fasting can be a lot better than what you've previously been doing. So it can help get you some structure, get you some health benefit, but I do believe that as you progress through intermittent fasting, you do need to move on to better matching your meal intake to your like your energy intake timing to your activity timing. So that would be eating like a breakfast, a lunch, and a dinner. So if you're currently used to having 2 feeding times, you know, then adding in a third, you know, kind of helps a little bit as well. So the more you can kind of match the meal timing, the energy intake to the energy output, you're going to get even healthier and healthier results. Okay, so hopefully to the person that requested this topic, this was everything you wanted to know. If it wasn't, shoot me an email and I'll help with any other direct questions you have. And that goes for everybody. So if you have a more specific question, just shoot us an email at brutalirongym@gmail.com and we'll answer it for you. So we'll help you get more data. Cool. So hopefully this was helpful, okay? So if you like this information, you can find more from us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Brutal Iron Gym. Also, if you like the podcast, please share it. So the more we can share good quality information, and that's definitely the assumption that this is good quality information. But the more we share it, the more people we share this with, the happier the world's going to be, the happier those people will be, and the more in control of their own happiness and health they'll be. So if you have somebody you care about and you want to be healthy and happy, share this podcast, okay? And then if you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions, we'd love to hear from you, just like the listener did for this one, is let us know what you want to learn about. So the podcast is for you, so the more you tell us what you want to know, we'll make more podcasts about that, okay? And you can reach us at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.